Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, DA, I'm thirsty, man. Could you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, DA, what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
DA, what's the silly? Oh, permission to get in that mothership.
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, DA? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My coworker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Need to know what it takes for a home loan to fit your budget and your family? Rocket can. We thank you for being with us on a Target Demo Friday, which means we want to know on both Twitter and on Facebook, where are you? How are you listening? And what are you doing? I'll read through those coming up here on the show with Bacon. Coming up in about an hour and a half from now. Find the meme on Twitter, DA on CBS, of Mraz keeled over on the couch after his big Sunday. Also on Facebook at facebook.com/TheDAShow.
With Bacon.
Coming up this hour on the show, Super Dave with his college football picks. Try to chase down Mraz in the Battle of the Bulge, year number 3. Well,
yeah.
I guess that's... So there's a lot of... This is hard because it's been rebooted so many times. The Battle of the Bulge was the year that you took on he who shall not be named.
Right.
Both of you were...
Faceless person, yes.
Both of you were larger people. But you have actually battled somebody, and that was 3 years ago, so this would be year 3 after that. However, you've actually battled somebody in some way, shape, or form every year since we started this. It was Kenny Brock the first 2 years. Then it was James Ward after that. Then it was he who shall not be named. Then it was Super Dave last year and Super Dave again this year. So we've had a real potpourri of college football guest pickers, and we've never really named it anything like the challenge. We've never named it anything. It was Battle of the Bulge for 1 year, but that was the only year you went up against another guy that was as big as you.
As big as me?
Bigger, but that both of you guys were big. Everybody else
right.
has been normal-sized. Normal-sized humans.
Normal-sized? You're tightrope in here. A very thin line, young man.
They're not fat.
Bro, God, Pete, stop. Pete, if you are going to say that, embrace the fact that you are the biggest bulge of the Battle of the Bulge.
Fat.
I'm not going to do it anymore, Pete. I'm not
going
to do it anymore. The man is heavy. He's robust, but we're not allowed to call him heavy, but he can chime in with the elements are not fat.
Fat.
I'm not doing it anymore. It's a Friday.
Fat.
If Pete wants to call me fat, that's fine, but fair game, fatty, because
fat.
You are just as fat, if not fatter.
Fat.
You're closer to he who should not be named than me, so stop it. That's all. Trying to have a nice Friday.
Pete, any response, or should I just move on?
Just move on.
Mm. Of course. Okay.
So I don't know if we should name this. Should we name the picks challenge? I don't know. I'll have to come up with something, so... We've got Super Dave coming up here in 20 minutes, and in 40 minutes, yeah.
David versus Goliath.
Okay.
That just blew your mind. That's pretty good.
It's pretty good. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty good. I mean, so you are calling yourself a larger human being there.
DA, have I hid from that in 8 years?
No.
No, I have not.
You certainly haven't.
My belly.
Okay.
His name's Dave.
Okay. Cap likes it. If Cap's signing off on it, let's do it. David versus Goliath. Now, the only problem is we have to change the name again once Super Dave doesn't do this anymore. So I was kind of thinking about some kind of more generic umbrella phrase for our college football picks versus our NFL picks. But we'll keep workshopping this. For the time being, working title is David versus Goliath. Super David is going to be joining us coming up in 20 minutes. And in 40 minutes, our friend Brian Jones from the SEC on CBS, of course, used to listen to him in this time slot. He'll join us going into the big Georgia versus Bama game tomorrow night and the latest on Nick Saban.
They Let's wrapped that big old wiener in bacon. Bacon.
You could have fooled me that right now Brian Jones is already on the line listening to the show. That sounds like something he could be talking about in terms of our show. Mraz was talking about slamming a foot-long hot dog in a pie crust yesterday when he came to visit me, and we've talked about bacon all morning long because of this breathable bacon-scented mask that Hormel is putting out.
Bacon.
Hey! Bacon!
Big old wiener and bacon.
Maybe that'll be the name of the picks contest. Big old wiener and bacon.
Big old wiener and bacon.
It's original.
Hey. Big old wiener.
Bacon.
And bacon.
With bacon.
Bacon.
So the game of the weekend in the NFL is definitely Packers and Bucks. All eyes, late window on Fox. It's going to be on Brady versus Rodgers, Packers versus Bucks. And going into this game, Brady's coming off an embarrassing moment against the Bears. Not only did he lose to the Bears, and the Bears are the most peculiar 4-1 ever, but Brady, at the end of that game, thinks it's fourth down. It's not. The series is over. He holds up four fingers. And now, infamously forever, it's going to be basically the crying Jordan meme. Is him holding up four fingers. A proud, legendary player having a major embarrassing moment of that being used against him forever on social media. I thought it was a bad play by Brady to deny that he mistakenly thought there was another down. Bad. Just own that. When you make a bad mistake, you just got to own it, especially if you're Brady and you've tried to laugh at yourself on social media, or at least your social media team has, tried to poke fun at yourself over the last couple of years, trying to make this kind of happy-go-lucky, cool dad type of Tom Brady. You've got to own that. Yeah, I thought there was another down. That's my bad. He kind of owned it this week when he tweeted out a picture of a Photoshop of LeBron James's head on Tom Brady's body holding up the four for his fourth ring. So at least Brady acknowledged it. But once Brady denied, okay, once Brady denied that it was a mistake, that he didn't know it, he becomes fodder. It's like, oh, yeah, really? Oh, now you can't even own it. And here is Jamal Williams, Packers running back, talking about this upcoming game. He told Game On Wisconsin, quote, "Come on, man. I'm pretty sure my quarterback knows what fourth down is. Know what I mean?" That's what I'm saying. Like, Aaron Rodgers would never do that. Never. Know what I mean? Rodgers is too smart for that. He would never be in that type of situation because A-Rod is always prepared, always looking at the clock. We've got too many people who are just too ready to go. We've been in those type of pressure situations before, so I feel like it's just natural for us to be on top of everything and go ball out. I would never expect that from my boy, Aaron Rodgers. Now, this to me is indicative of a legend in twilight, because I don't think if this is Tom Brady in his prime, an opposing player is willing to go after Tom Brady like that. I think because Brady has looked vulnerable, and because Brady is up there in years, and because Brady is no longer playing for the Patriots, it kind of becomes open season. Now, if Brady goes out there and riddles the Packers defense, of which Jamal Williams will not be defending, then Brady might have that aura come back where, hey, don't mess with him. He's still a witch. Don't mess with him. He's still going to come and rip your heart out. But for the moment, because the Bucs are 3-2, because Brady's had two ugly games this season, the opener against the Saints, Thursday against the Bears, because Brady now has an infamous meme where he didn't know what down it was and denied it, he becomes fodder for guys to laugh at him, to joke about him. And this happens to all players and teams that become vulnerable, okay? Think about Kobe going after Michael Jordan in an All-Star game. Think about all of the players that went after Michael Jordan when he was on the Wizards. Think about the players, think about the teams that love when a dynasty is crumbling and then say, we want our chunk of flesh. They beat our brains in forever, and now we want to dance on their grave. This happens a lot. It happens to the greats. It happens to the great teams. Guys that have been pounded for years by that squad or that guy want to go after that guy, and that's what you're going to see happen. Now, Jamal Williams hasn't been tortured by Tom Brady, but I'm sure he's one of many NFL players, Mraz, laughing at Brady's gaffe, because it makes Brady seem fallible, it makes him seem mortal, it makes him seem vulnerable, and now you want to be the guys that take him out. You want to be the next guys that take him out. You don't do this when Brady is 6-0 and crushing you, you know, and every week throwing for 400 yards. You do this when you think you can win. You do this when you think you can laugh in his face. It's a bully that has been bullying others for a long time. And now finally, the kid that's been bullied has grown up to be bigger. And now he's going to come after you and laugh at you and want his chunk of flesh. I think this is going to be part of the Brady cycle here, where if he shows vulnerability, Mraz, opposing players are going to want to kind of clown him publicly.
As they should. It's the old, you know, hate us because you ain't us. And Tom Brady and the Patriots, before he was a Buck, I mean, they basically were the machine that everybody had to deal with, and you had to deal with being asked a million questions. How are you going to slow Tom Brady? How are you going to beat him? How are you going to do this? Then when he goes to Tampa Bay in the offseason, what is the entire offseason about? How good the Bucs are going to be. They're building a dream team. Tampa Bay's and Brady are laughing in your face. Oh, here comes Gronk. And now you see the vulnerabilities, him looking lost. If you're a team that's playing really well, and you know now, for the first time ever, there are teams that take the field and know they're better than a Tom Brady team. And that's exactly how the Packers feel this week. Of course you're now going to take those pot shots, because why wouldn't you? Because basically you've had to deal with all the nonsense of dealing with you're not better than him and you're not better than them for the last 15 years, or at least for some of these guys the last couple of years, and that's over now. It's over, DA, over.
Now, for the record, Brady has a chance to shut everybody up.
He can, oh, sure.
On Sunday, if he goes out there and absolutely crushes them and throws 4 touchdowns and 380 yards and Brady looks like old Brady, guys are going to have to shut up.
Sure.
But this is the start of, if Brady goes out there in this huge spot against, I think, the best team in football right now and lays an egg, doesn't a lot of his invincibility go away? Because, I mean, if he can't beat the Bears, that's tough. But if he can't beat the Bears, doesn't know fourth down, and then this game, which is going to go to about 99% of the country, if he looks old or ineffective and the Bucs don't look good, which, again, they're playing a really good team in the Packers, I think suddenly a lot of the aura washes off of Brady in a two-week span.
It's already begun to wash off. It could be evaporated if the Packers just go trounce them this week. I would think Brady has a little bit of pride this week. I mean, but only pride can only so much.
Well, he's got a lot of pride. I don't think it's the pride thing. It's not the work. It's not the pride. It's just the effectiveness of where he is at his age.
But that's my point. How much can his pride make up for the lack of effectiveness with his age? Right? Like, how much can he will himself pride-wise? Because, frankly, he doesn't belong on the same field as Aaron Rodgers right now from the quarterback position. He doesn't. So
does besides probably Russell Wilson and Patrick Mahomes.
Right. But Tom Brady really doesn't. I mean, he just lost to Nick Foles. How much can that pride and that competitor in him muster up for the lack of ability on Sunday? Because that's what it's going to be. There's a complete mismatch at the quarterback position. And Brady's not often been in that spot.
And I think the Packers also, while it's not necessarily taken on the second or third best team in football because the Buccaneers are fine, they're not great, it is also a statement moment for Rodgers and this Packers team because everybody's watching. Because it is still Tom Brady, people are going to value this more than they would value other wins over teams that are at the Buccaneers level. Rodgers is insane right now. He has not thrown an INT. He has spread the football around to about 13 different receivers. They haven't lost a game. They're going on the road to Tampa. I think if the Packers win this game and win this game easily, it will establish the Packers as the best team in football by everybody's accounts, even though they probably should already be there. I think this line's really interesting. The Packers are only favored by 1 point in this game. On a neutral site, are you telling me that the Packers aren't more than 4 points better than the Bucs? Because I absolutely am convinced they are 4 points better than the Bucs. It is on the road, so you establish a three-point line for the home team. But it's not a real home field advantage. Should the Packers only be a one-point favorite in this game?
No, they shouldn't. They should be much more. But I think the betting public is believing a little bit in Brady here.
Totally.
I do think there's a little bit of the betting public that probably forgets how good the Packers were because of how week-to-week this league is, and they're coming off a bye week, right? We had so much happen since the last time we've seen the Packers play a game that maybe you forget how good they are. And maybe there's also a portion of people who just don't buy the Packers' schedule so far, even though I think that would be ridiculous. But the Packers haven't won a game by less than a touchdown all year. I mean, they're not just beating guys. They're not even playing close games.
Well, so, and that game that they won by only a touchdown is against the best team on their schedule, the New Orleans Saints, who are perhaps one of the best teams in football. They scorched the Vikings, destroyed the Lions, and laughed past the Falcons. So against mediocre teams, which I would say, I mean, I don't know how much better the Buccaneers are than those teams. I know the Falcons are winless, the Vikings are pathetic, the Lions are coached by Matt Patricia, but the Bucs aren't a top five team in football. They might not be a top 10 team in football.
Right. So they did lose to the Saints, who the Packers did beat by a touchdown.
Yeah. So it seems like a really small line. I would agree. I think this is all about the betting public figuring that Brady on a long week, because he lost to the Bears on a Thursday night, coming off of an embarrassing ending, is going to have a great game, which I disagree. I don't think he'll have a great game, but I'm transfixed to this game. I mean, this is the one that everybody wants to see. Brady, Bucks versus Rodgers and the Packers, the late window on Fox on Sunday.
And only two late window games in the entire league this week. This is only going up against the Jets and Dolphins.
They have cleared the deck for this.
Yes.
Both networks have cleared the deck for Bucks and Packers. When we come back, Super David, as part of David and Goliath, is going to have his college football picks. We'll get him coming up next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
It's a spread. It's a line. It's Super Dave.
Well, I'm just never going to pass up an opportunity to chant, "Let's go, P." Mississippi is just the pinnacle of college football right now with Lane Kiffin and Mike Leach and Deion Sanders.
With your weekly college football picks.
I think about it because obviously on sale means you're getting a bargain, but I think I'd buy a racehorse first.
Thank you, Super Dave.
Super Dave this year is 6-8-1 on the season. Mraz is 11-4, so Super Dave has some catching up to do. Super Dave, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, DA. I'm well. Mraz is on fire, but we know he tends to fade late.
No question, it opened the door for you to come back and win last season, forcing him to take the SAT. And so we begin with Syracuse and Liberty. Somehow, at the Carrier Dome, Liberty is a three-point favorite. Is this the day the Carrier Dome died?
Yeah, they did a $100 million renovation on the Carrier Dome, and if they lose to Liberty, they might as well just implode it. Let's be honest here. Syracuse is a really bad ACC football team. Their quarterback, Tommy DeVito, is out. They've got several running backs hurt. Their best player, Andrew Sisco, is done for the year. But they're playing Liberty. If you lose to Liberty and you're Dino Babers, you should be talking to your agent and looking very carefully at your contract and figuring out how much money you can take out, because your future is not a very strong one. This is a team that Syracuse beat last year 24-0. You remember Hugh Freeze coached that game in a hospital bed from the press box in Lynchburg? Liberty went on to win that memorable Cure Bowl over Georgia Southern. This year, they're 4-0. The Flames are 4-0. Those four teams are combined 1-11. Oh. I'm not telling you Syracuse is going to win, but they're getting points. They're at home. And if you can't beat Liberty, you might as well just stop playing football and get ready for basketball season.
Let's move on elsewhere in the ACC. Wake Forest and Virginia. Wake Forest plus the 2.5. Why? Because two equal teams, but the home team off of a bye as an underdog is your type of bargain.
Yeah, you know, there's nothing that fun or sexy about this game. I just think you're getting value with Wake Forest. Both of these teams have lost to Clemson and lost to NC State. Virginia beat Duke 38-20, and Wake Forest blew out Campbell. But you get Wake at home and off a bye, very similar resumes, you get points. I just think the Demon Deacons give you a little bit of value.
And finally, Memphis against UCF. This game is at Memphis. UCF is a three-point favorite. But the Liberty Bowl is going to be sold out with 10,000 fans, perhaps to honor their legendary mascot. So where do you go here?
There's not going to be a dry eye in the house. Before the game begins, there's going to be a ceremony to honor Tom III. That's Tom, T-O-M, Tigers of Memphis. He passed away just after his 12th birthday on September 18th. He was born in Wisconsin, but obviously a Tennessee type. No word whether he was a bigger fan of Corky's Barbecue or Rendezvous. He may have liked both, but I still don't think the football team's good enough. I think they spent kind of a month honoring Tom when they were out for COVID, eating a lot of barbecue, and they came back and played okay against SMU, a 30-27 loss last week, but they gave up 500 yards of offense. I don't see any way that Memphis is going to stop UCF. UCF has won 13 straight games in this matchup. UCF won both the 17 and 18 American Conference title games against Memphis. Both of those would have covered this three-point spread. I think UCF is pretty good. I think they pass for as many yards as they want to. And, you know, the fans, the 10,000 of them, they're all riled up. They're all excited about Tom. I think they cry at the ceremony and throughout the game.
Those are the picks from Super Dave. We ran out of time last week, but I wanted to ask you about Greg Marshall, because he coached Winthrop to 6 regular season titles. You've been at Winthrop for a long time. You've watched Greg Marshall teams. He's now under the spotlight and the scrutiny of allegations going on at Wichita State. What are your thoughts of Greg Marshall right now, who is dealing with a lot of very intense allegations?
As a basketball coach, X's and O's, at practice, in games, there aren't 10 coaches in the country over the last decade and a half better than Greg Marshall. Greg Marshall's idol is Bob Knight, and there is some tough love. Did he cross a line? I wasn't at Wichita State practice. I don't know. I know that Greg Marshall makes his players better. And I know sometimes Greg Marshall breaks his players down in order to build them up again. I am very suspicious about the stuff that says there were racial overtones. I never saw that in my years at Winthrop. But what happened on a single day? I don't know, DA.
So the allegations are pretty aggressive, and we've seen some video that has surfaced of him really going after officials, really needing to be kind of pulled back after a really intense confrontation with officials. That was at McGill University in a preseason game. And I wonder, with his very aggressive style of coaching, did you run into players that were bent out of shape, that did want to transfer, that did feel like he went over the line, or were you constantly around players that appreciated that by the end of their tenure?
I think somewhere in between. I remember talking to Craig Bradshaw, one of his best players at Winthrop, after Bradshaw graduated. Bradshaw was part of a team that went 29-5 and beat Notre Dame in the first round of the NCAA tournament. And it was a few months after his graduation. He was beginning his pro career. And I said, what do you think after all of those years? And he said something like, you know, he was a tough son of a gun, and there were days I hated him, and he made me a small fortune.
That's an interesting way to put it. Dave Friedman is our college football picker. If he ends up winning this, he forces Mraz to do a book report on the book of our choice. If Mraz beats him, he's got to use our drops, like a with bacon, in one of his Winthrop basketball play-by-play calls this upcoming season. So
with bacon.
We wait to see how it unfolds. Super Dave, always good to talk to you, buddy. Thanks.
Great to talk with you, DA.
Standing by with our head.
It's a plane!
Super Dave.
Super Dave! I love hearing Johnny Carson on a Friday. Standing by with our headlines is a kind sir, Andrew Bogish. Mr. Bogues, what'd you make of Mraz versus Bilotti in calling each other the F word last segment?
Yeah, I mean, that was some real heat. I mean, and we also had Sean earlier with the drink comparison conversation. He had his hat off, slamming on his thigh. So he's been pretty worked up this morning. And I kind of see his point. Like, there is a line that Pete can't cross. No, to a certain extent. And, like, everyone's got to be careful of not throwing stones in glass houses. Is that the cliche, Sean? You're good at those.
Yes. You can't throw stones if you happen to live in a house that's made of glass.
Right. That's better said. So you just got to be careful about the fights that you pick in these scenarios for us.
Okay. All right.
Bogus, take it away.
Pete, not happy. What do we got in the headlines?
Time for a break yet?
I still don't know.
If the Falcons are returning to their practice facility today after two COVID positives this week, and now the Colts are closed today while they confirm multiple positives within their organization. As of now, Atlanta still playing Minnesota Sunday while Indy has a game with Cincinnati. The next stop for Le'Veon Bell is Kansas City. He picked the Chiefs over the Dolphins and the Bills the day after the Jets divorced him. Jimmy Garoppolo and his high ankle sprain practice fully for the second day in a row, but he still appears on the injury report, so he's not fully healthy just yet. The Niners play the Rams on Sunday night. Here we go again with Clayton Kershaw. He was fine for 5 innings of Game 4 of the NLCS last night, but then the 6th inning started with Ronald Acuna Jr.'s infield single with a throwing error, moving him to second. Kershaw got to 2 strikes on Freddie Freeman and Marcell Ozuna, but gave up RBI hits to both.
Yeah, it's a tough way to go for that 6th inning.
Kershaw left after Ozuna made it 3-1. Bruzdar Graterol and Victor Gonzalez let the Braves score 4 more, a 6-run inning leading to a 10-2 win and a 3-1 series lead for Atlanta. The Rays lead is down to 3-2 after another Astros win. Carlos Correa, game-ending solo shot bottom 9 for a 4-3 W. He told manager Dusty Baker what was coming.
Carlos told me, you know, before he went up there, he goes, you know, walk off. And I said, go ahead on, man. And then I said a prayer to my dad and my brother. And I said, Lord, please let us walk off.
Those prayers answered with a bomb to center, making the Astros just the fourth team out of 38 to see Game 6 after falling behind 0-3. The ALCS is first today. First pitch in San Diego is at 6 Eastern. The Braves can send the Dodgers home at 9. And now an update on the Clippers' head coaching search.
Mother in charge. His name is T. Lou.
Thanks, BT. Ty Lou.
Right.
Is the Clips' new head coach after being one of Doc Rivers' assistants this past season. And he'll have some locker room issues to smooth out, apparently. The Athletic, the latest to point out some issues. The longer-tenured Clippers apparently didn't like the preferential treatment Kawhi Leonard got. That included Kawhi telling Doc when Kawhi should come in and out of games. And he was allowed to live in San Diego, which is a pretty lengthy commute up to L.A., which made Kawhi late for practices and team flights on more than one occasion. So it sounds like that at least something that T. Lou or Ty Lou needs to figure out as he takes over. Daryl Morey is stepping down as Rockets GM after 13 seasons. And we finish with American tennis player Sam Querrey, who is kind of an international fugitive right now. Querrey and his wife tested positive for COVID last weekend ahead of an event in St. Petersburg, Russia. Now, protocols in the tennis world put him in isolation. The tourney said on Monday, doctors went to Querrey's hotel room to check him out, his wife out, and they were turned away with Querrey saying his kid was sleeping and he didn't want the doctors to wake them up. So the doctors left just fine. Tuesday morning, security footage has Querrey, his wife, and the baby sneaking out of the hotel. And then eventually, they say, getting on a private plane and leaving the country, breaking all sorts of tennis protocols. So the ATP is investigating, and Sam may be in a little bit of hot water. Although, I don't know that I can blame him. As dangerous as this is, if there's a place I don't want to be in isolation with COVID-19, it might be Russia. So I kind of would want to leave as soon as possible as well. So hopefully maybe he doesn't get in too much trouble for being a dummy, but this is certainly at least a fun story to keep an eye on.
You don't want to be in isolation in Russia or with your child and your wife. You don't want to.
Actually, they were left behind. He just left.
Yeah, right, yeah. He said, keep the hotel warm for me. I'll be right back.
I'll be back. Right back.
I'm heading over to Switzerland. Milk. Yeah, I'll be in Monaco for the weekend. All right, thank you, Bogues. When we come back, our friend Brian Jones is going to join us, which is awesome. By the way, our toll-free line is 855-212-4227, sponsored by Geico. Want to know what's really scary? Seeing just how much you could have been saving on car insurance by switching to Geico. It'll keep you up at night. Switch to Geico and save. We'll talk about the Georgia and Bama game tomorrow night with Brian Jones next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Are hard. Your sports radio show doesn't have to be.
Damon Amendola. How you say it? Amendola?
My last name is Amendolara.
Oh, damn.
It has.
Hey, on the tugboat, you whatever we say you are, okay?
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
We had the mothership. Chew and Jones at the tugboat. Always appreciated them having me on the show. It's an Ask the Pros kind of day today. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly. Better parts, better prices every day. You heard his voice right here. Mornings on CBS Sports Radio. Now you watch him on TV. The SEC on CBS coverage starts this Saturday. Tomorrow, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. College football, the drive to Atlanta, presented by Mercedes-Benz and State Farm College Football. Today, before the biggie, number 2, Bama, taking on number 3, Georgia. Our friend, Ryan Jones. BJ, good morning. How you doing?
What's happening, Amendola, Amendolara? Yeah, you're right. We were the tugboat back then, Gio and I. We were fat as hell. And now we got on that slim faster, so we looking good.
Yeah, you see how skinny Gio's looking these days?
Dude, y'all need to get him off that crack. Y'all need to have an intervention right now. I'll come and hold him down. Yeah, man, he's looking great.
Tomorrow night, if the Bulldogs can't beat the Tide when Nick Saban is not allowed in the building, when are they ever going to beat the Alabama Crimson Tide?
Well, listen, Alabama it can run off on osmosis because of the way Nick Saban has built that program. Yes, you will miss his presence. It looms larger than life. But everyone within that facility knows what their responsibility is. They know how they have to go out and perform. They know what's expected. They know The culture, it's ingrained in them from day one, and you've seen the players come, players go, the same with coaches, but everyone buys in to the core philosophy which Nick Saban has instilled there. So from that aspect, nothing will change. Of course, there may be some crucial moments, as we've seen in the previous matchups between these two, and Coach Saban has gotten the best of Kirby Smart. Coach Smart has rolled the dice on a couple of head-scratcher situations and has come up with egg in his face. But Nick Saban will be missed in those crucial moments that may arise and have heretofore. But I think as far as him not being there and not towering over guys and not there to chew them out in person, they know they will eventually be chewed out. they know how to go out and play Alabama football, especially this defense, on the heels of that performance versus Ole Miss. And I think, one, Ole Miss is going to make a lot of teams look bad, but I don't recall a Nick Saban coach defense flopping around, missing as many tackles as they did in that ball game. Some you chalk up the scheme. Lane Kiffin is an incredible play caller. He learned a lot from his father, who was my defensive coordinator for a time with the New Orleans Saints, who was a brilliant football mind. And of course, some of that trickled down to his son. A lot of it trickled down to his son on the offensive side of the ball. So I think he will make a lot of defenses look a mess. And that was the deal last week versus Bama. But the missed tackles, that's something that's inexcusable.
Who do you favor in the quarterback matchup? Two unproven guys in big situations, Stetson Bennett at Georgia and Mac Jones at Alabama. Where's the arrow go for you?
I'm going to favor Mac Jones. I thought he was more than a placeholder heading into this season with all the fanfare around the freshman Bryce Young. I thought Mac Jones availed himself around there rather nicely last year in some big ball games. Go back to that Auburn game, the Iron Bowl, where he was facing three eventual first-round picks off that Auburn defense. Yeah, he did have some pick sixes in that game. One was a fluke, of course. But he still played pretty well. Go to the bowl game versus Michigan. He tore them apart over 300 yards passing. And I felt like he would have a good grasp of this offseason, of this offense, excuse me, even without an offseason, without spring ball. And that has come to fruition. So he's lights out right now, and he's got a plethora of weapons. They're in sync. So I give him the edge. But that being said, Stetson Bennett IV, the guy who was on no one's radar. He wasn't even on the damn radar of the Georgia folks, and he was in that locker room. But, you know, he stayed consistent. He kept his head down. He worked hard, and here he is in the limelight and has played extremely well. No marks as far as negativity on that stat line currently. If he can keep that clean, he gives them a good chance to win.
Our friend Brian Jones joins us from the SEC on CBS tomorrow night. Georgia and Alabama. Alabama, second-ranked team of the country. Georgia, number three. What's the biggest reason that Georgia's been able to build under Kirby Smart a program that can rival Alabama on the field? Is it sheer talent acquisition and recruiting? Is Kirby specifically a good game manager? How has this worked for Georgia over the last couple of years under Kirby?
It's because of his time spent with Nick Saban. As a former Saban assistant told me the other day, if you spend at least a year or so with Nick Saban, you're going to build your program like Nick Saban has built his. And why wouldn't you, considering the success? Six national championships, arguably, there's no argument. He's the best college football coach ever. So when you spend time with him and you've seen this recipe and you know what type of ingredients to go out there and recruit, you have a good idea of how to build for success. And that's what Kirby Smart has done. They've recruited extremely well. It's been outstanding, to tell you the truth. They're top five each and every year. And Kirby Smart was running those defenses for Nick Saban for the majority of those national titles. So he knows what it looks like. And you look at his defense now, this is how Bama's defense used to look. The first wave, the second wave. You change the names, you change the numbers, but the production does not fall back. So that's how Bama used to look. They used to come at you with waves on the defensive side of the ball. That's what Georgia's enjoying currently. They had a damn good defense last year, led in rush defense. They're right back doing that again this season. So defensively, that's Bama. If he's Tennessee, throw them in the mix. Jeremy Pruitt, a former Bama assistant. Derek Ansley, the defensive coordinator for Tennessee, coached under Nick Saban. So all these guys learned the trade in the Saban way. So they're trying to replicate that now at these other spots where they are. Kirby Smart's there. Hadn't been able to get over the hump, of course, by knocking off Nick Saban. I think they can this weekend. And Tennessee's trying to get there. They just didn't have enough for four quarters for Georgia.
Another interesting game this weekend of the SEC is A&M at Mississippi State, because we don't really know what Mississippi State is week in, week out after they thrashed LSU. They've been punked the last 2 weeks. A&M can never get a signature victory, and yet they did last week against Florida, so now suddenly Jimbo is ranked number 11 in the country. How do you figure these two teams week to week this season?
We know who Mississippi State is. They're exactly what I thought they would be. I know we were all shocked, and we jumped on the bandwagon and said, well, maybe this is something different. But if you can't run the ball in this league, you can't win in this league. And they can't run the ball, and they return the SEC's leading rusher from a season ago. And where do they rank right now? I mean, they're dead last. And that's terrible. Why wouldn't you lean on Kylan Hill? And I said at the beginning of the season, yeah, you chunked it around on LSU, great. But teams catch up to that. And all you had to do was employ a simple defense. Rick Neuheisen over there screaming. Bo Pelini, what the hell are you doing? How about you just rush three, you drop eight, you keep everything in front of you, you come up and you make the tackle. They didn't do that. And, of course, KJ Costello and the Bulldogs torched them. What has everyone done since? Arkansas, Kentucky. Hell, they didn't even score. The offense team scored last week. I mean, Kentucky shut them down completely because they can't run the ball. And Costello and the backup threw, what, four or five interceptions in that ball game. They got nine interceptions in their last two ball games. So we know exactly who they are. That being said, their defense is playing damn well. Zach Arnett, the new defensive coordinator, has these guys number three or number two right now in the SEC in defense, at least the rush defense. They shut down Terry Wilson in that offense for Kentucky a week ago, had over 400 yards on the ground versus Ole Miss. They had 157 total yards, total, versus Mississippi State. So the defense is there. The offense, they're terrible.
So you think this can't work with Mike Leach because he's never going to be able to run the football. He's always going to want to throw it 70 times a day.
Yo, it's not going to work. I mean, unless you get some guys like Bama has, and this is no knock on the wide receivers. I think Osiris Mitchell's a good target. They have others there. But if you can't protect KJ Costello and these guys can't get open downfield, no, it's not going to work. He's a cautionary tale, just like he was at Texas Tech. He had a year there at Tech where he won double digits, of course, knocked off my Longhorns when they were number one. He had a year or two there at Washington State where they won double digit games. We'll see if that happens at Mississippi State. I'm going to say it will not until you learn how to run the rock. That's the same thing that's bothering me about my Texas Longhorns right now. They can't run the ball when they need to run the damn ball. So this game will never change. It's predicated on blocking and tackling, and you have to be able to run the ball at some point.
Are you embarrassed by the Big 12 and the fact that Oklahoma and Texas are seemingly out of the playoff already?
No, I'm not embarrassed. I'm not tied to the Big 12. I have the Texas Longhorns have a blank check in my emotions. That's it. I'm not tied with the Big 12. I don't have a conference allegiance. I have an allegiance to my alma mater, and that's it. That's as far as it goes. So I'm not worried about the league as a whole. And, hell, no one can say anything right now about the Big 12 because you got defenses in the SEC that look like the Big 12 defenses. So I wouldn't, outside of Georgia, no one should be, and Mississippi State, who we just mentioned, no one should be saying any damn thing about Big 12 defenses. So, no, I'm worried more about our head coach there in Austin. This is his fourth year, and they have no identity. They've lost two straight. The program has lost five out of six to Oklahoma. So that's where my allegiance lies. I'm not joined at the hip with the conference. Never have, never will be. I want Texas to do well. That's it.
Well, they also can't beat TCU either. That's a problem at UT.
No, they can't beat TCU. Thanks for bringing – why don't you just bring up something else negative, D.A.? You're right. Just screw up my Friday morning. You're right. They can't beat TCU. And what did K-State, which was my upset pick last week, what did they do? Went into Fort Worth, and they tattooed Max Duggan, the excellent quarterback for the Horned Frogs. They didn't allow anything deep. This is the same quarterback that ran through the Texas defense a week ago or 2 weeks ago, the same defense – that OU, which couldn't run the ball until a week ago, over 200 yards versus Texas. So K-State and Oklahoma State right now, and even Iowa State after, you know, K-State and Iowa State with the bad beginning of the season, losing the Sun Belt teams, have really turned it around. They play physical football. They have an identity. So they are the bell cows. And so that comment by Gary Patterson a week ago about everything doesn't hinge on what Texas or OU does didn't age well because, you know, they got ran on and not embarrassed, but beat upon pretty well by K-State. So those are some good football teams. They don't have the talent of a Texas or Oklahoma, but what they do have is big heart, and they play physical ball.
SEC on CBS coverage tomorrow night. This is a big one. Number 2, Crimson Tide. Number 3, Bulldogs. Tomorrow, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, College Football, The Drive to Atlanta, presented by Mercedes-Benz and State Farm College Football Today. Our man, our friend, our pal, Brian Jones. Sorry about ruining your Friday today, my man.
I can handle it, baby. Worst has happened, trust me.
Thanks, brother.
All right, appreciate you, D.A.
All right, see you, dude. Brian Jones joining us to talk a little college football. Is there a better college football spot than Brian Jones? I wish we could have him on every single day, at least every single week, because I could talk college football with Jones every single day throughout the season. When we come back, it's a big one of the AFC North. Can the Browns crash the Steelers and Ravens' perennial party? Next.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.